Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. This is the beginning of Follow the White Rabbit 17, and I want to tell you where we are on this third rock from the sun. There's, we're coming into the age of revealing, and in America, it's been kind of entertaining. You know, we got History Channel and Discovery Channel specials on Hitler being alive. And America apparently wasn't founded by Christopher Columbus. No, he was founded by the Templar Knights, which is, you know, is a huge conspiracy theory. But now they're playing it on mainstream channels. What the truth is, I don't know. I'm waiting for Elvis to be alive on Venus. But that's the times we're in. And this is going on all across the planet, by the way, in some way, shape, manner, form. There's huge revisionists going on in Chinese history and Japanese history and South America and Colombia, so on, so forth, etc. And maybe you've paid attention to some of these trends. But that's the kind of times we're in. And, of course, we got the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters and acting like the ring rats from Lord of the Rings. And they're in search for that ring of power, you know. And we got the red hippopotamus acting like Sauron, who's got to rule Middle Earth. And they got themselves in a bit of problem. They got to go to war. Kind of arrogant, but at the same time, you know, they're kind of fearful. They don't have everything all together because they certainly don't have some ring of power. And we got the little pink rabbits running around like Gollum, and they don't know any better. And Gollum didn't know any better, and he just danced right into the fire with that ring, but that's his destiny. And, of course, we got the Obama, the Talibama, and he's going to try to order the Green Goddess over there to defend Israel. The problem with ordering the Green Goddess, Godzilla, is she won't listen to him. She's going to be on a totally different time frame and a totally different mindset. She won't listen to him, and she probably won't listen to any white rabbit. She certainly isn't going to be interested in listening to any pink rabbits. But she may sneak over there, and she may give them her favorite two words that they haven't heard in decades. And those two famous words are razzle-dazzle. Yes, she can do that. The white rabbit god may have her on a leash on a totally different sequence and schedule, and she may just surprise the world. Who knows? We're going to find out. Speaking of Obama, something funny that just jumped into my head. In America, you know, there's a illusion of free speech in America. And there's whole websites devoted to these churches, and there's a lot of churches in America. A lot. And some of these fundamental churches put up some funny signs. And they put up some very controversial sign, you know, gays are going to burn in hell, so on and so forth. And it always makes a big stir, and one is doing it probably every week. But someone put up a sign, it was quite a while ago, or maybe more than one, that the Taliban is the Antichrist. You know, Obama's the anti-rabbit. And I fell on the ground laughing. To me, the glass is always half full. The glass is never half empty. So if Obama's Antichrist, that's the greatest piece of news I've ever heard. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. I hope he is the anti-rabbit. Because if he's the voice of Sauron, that's wonderful. That's fantastic. We know what God's going to look like then, don't we? Yes, and we want all the speckly rabbits, all the Muslim rabbits, all the Mexican rabbits. Yes, you all follow the Taliban. You all follow the anti-rabbit because we don't want any excuses. No, we don't. But those church signs, they kill me. I hope it's true. Yes, but in this 17th one, I want to go over some things with you. In the course of me talking to you, you'll find one thing to be consistent. Most of the white nationalist media out there, which are all very good, a lot of them are very good, very well-meaning, they typically do not have the same tone and feel as this. One of my objectives was to flip the script. Instead of acting like all hope is lost, I'm going to show you the world from my perspective. And I'm going to make sure you understand the glass is half full. You always have hope because you're a white rabbit. Right now on the planet, the Anglosphere, the Anglo Empire, the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elister are under full court press. They're panicking. I saw an interview with Rothschild. He looked like he was going to die. They're going into something. They got to go to war, they feel, but they don't understand. They don't know the outcome. They've had this happen to them now consistently off and on over the past 50. They just don't know the implications. They don't know the full results, and they don't like that. They're used to financing wars. They're not used to personally having it all on the line, and this is the first time they will have it all on the line. And they don't look very certain. But you need to understand that you always have hope, right? Right now, Putipoot is putting the pressure, and what's going on in Afghanistan will ensure that he has complete control of Eurasia, which means a Russian-German-Italian axis is underway. So your worst-case scenario that I mentioned to you that they're worried about is that you up and leave and go live in a Russian-German axis because you're spread out over the whole top of the planet. So your worst-case scenario is you get on a plane and you go to, you know, white rabbit consolidation. That's your worst-case scenario, because your gene pool, the gene pool is too valuable. And that's the problem. What would you do if you were in charge and you knew where you're going to lose everything, you're going to go to tribunal over some reason? There are many reasons for them to go to tribunal. I'm just one compartment here. And they're not going to let up, and they're going to take your gene pool. Or you're going to, you know, have some kind of internal revolutionary politics inside America, and then it can be over with very quickly in a two-party system. So they got a lot of problems, but you have hope. Don't ever think that you don't have hope or that all hope is lost, because you're a white rabbit. In California, as California browns out, they have no hope. They're bankrupt. It's terminal. You're a white rabbit, so you always have hope. You know, you have the genetic capital that everyone wants. And Putipoot, you may have to speak Russian, learn Russian, but they will come after you. Lock, stock, and barrel, they will not hesitate, because the American experiment, taking Europeans in, letting them call themselves something new like an American, all speaking a common language over a vast amount of territory, works. It works across a vast amount of territory. In little closed society, in little small societies like Ireland, where they're all Irish and it's not a lot of space, well, that can cause some challenges if a lot of Polish people come in there overnight or something like that. That can cause some challenges. But over vast amounts of territory, it's been proven. So don't ever think that you don't have hope. You have all kinds of it. But your enemy is in a lot of trouble. And what we're going to do in 17 is I'm going to go over a complete strategy and put everything together and show you what I want you doing at the local level, right where you're at. I've introduced you to a simple repeating phrase, like, in your opinion, you're a racist. In your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. I introduced another one that people are using. In your opinion, I'm an anti-Semite. You're just saying that because I'm a Gentile, and any time a Gentile says anything to you, you yell anti-Semitism. Those are very effective. They work. You work as much as you repeat them. I'm going to introduce you some new advanced concepts that I think you're ready for if you've listened to enough of this. They're very simple. Why they work is pretty much timing. You know, simple word phrases like "Oh yes, we can work if you have someone, you know, someone on your side that can help you time it, and that's the key phrase. And we're going to go over some topics. I mentioned that in negative conditioning, repressive conditioning about white self-hatred. I've got a lot of emails over that. People were pretty flipped out by the stuff I went into, but a lot of it makes sense to white rabbits for some reason because, well, now you know how you think a little bit better. But we're going to play into this theme of white self-hatred because they're believing it. We have a few different scenarios in mind, and I'm going to go over each one of you, and I'm going to tell you why they work and when they're going to work and what to do. And they're simple phrases, but what we're doing is baseline humiliation tactics and techniques. It is insidious, but it is so simple because we're coming out of repressive, negative conditioning with massive amounts of demoralization, and they're coming out fast. And we're going to go into different sectors, and these sectors are broken down generationally. And we're going to give a few different. We're going to speak to a few different main generations, and I'm going to give the phrases for each one. And they are humiliation tactics. They're not vulgar. they're not vulgar. It's as much as, you know, maybe someone walked into the office with a funny tie and first person made fun of his tie, then the rest are making fun of his tie. And he takes it serious, but it's kind of humiliation. He's not going to wear that tie again. That's the type of behavior we're doing. What we're doing is attacking political correctness. Political correctness is a religion. It's a religion that's been forced on you. If you don't like it, they call you heretic and they put you in front of some tribunal or something like that. And we're going to go into this, and I'm going to go into it further and deeper, but it's very simple now that we're ready to tie everything together. I'll be back in a minute, and we'll start this. As white rabbits are coming out of this negative, this repressive conditioning, and this heavily demoralized state, three interesting themes are coming up. Many of you, I'm guessing everyone, has heard seen these books coming out of Anglosphere and all over the West talking about white self-hatred. They started slowly over 10, 15 years ago, but they've been coming up. Black people are writing the books, everyone's writing these books, everyone has heard this term, white self-hatred. We're going to use this, in a simple but effective way. But what's happening is in three different segments, we have the World War II generation asking subconsciously why they went to war. And I'm going to go into a little bit more on the tactic to use against them. We have what I call the Schwab babies, the self-hating white baby boomers, the baby boomers in America, Anglosphere, and Germany. They're starting to feel guilty about feeling guilty about being white. In other words, they're starting to feel, I'm going to say this again, they're feeling guilty about their white guilt. It's pretty funny. But that's how white rabbits think. They're feeling guilty about being white. You have the younger generation. The younger generation, Generation X on down. And they're reading websites like Stuff White People Like. What they're doing is starting to feel funny about feeling funny about being white. In other words, they're questioning the question. They're asking what is true here. They're starting to, subconsciously, it is coming out in perverse ways, in a weird way, because we are unique. It is coming out that they are starting to question why they feel so funny about being white. They're feeling funny about being white. It is a unique thing that they're going through. And if you listen to repressive conditioning, we understand demoralization now, it's all coming down one pipeline. But this term keeps coming up, white self-hatred. And what we're going to do is we're going to start hammering home. We're not going to fight anything. We're not going to argue, but we are going to use terms and phrases and buzzwords. Because this whole process of demoralization, this whole process of the dog faces of World War II, and I'll go into them in a minute, the whole process of the Schwab babies, the self-hating white baby boomers, as well as your local anti-racists, were started over two themes, guilt and humiliation. And we're going to go through how to use this as they're coming out to stoke that guilt that they first felt, to stoke the humiliation they first felt, to change their behavior. And what we're really doing is attacking. We're trying to attack the PCO, the political correctness officer in every area. Every area, every group has one. There are three levels. I call them Lone Rangers. Lone Ranger has to have his Tonto. There's a low level. They're easy to break. There's a mid-level. There's only a handful of mid-levels for all the UK. There's only a handful of the big anti-racist speakers for all the United States. The low-level ones, there's a few in every state. There's probably one little one in every area. You know, if you hand out some kind of British National Party flyers, they're the ones that call the police. There's only one in every area. And then there's a high level, like John McCain, the high level Lone Rangers, the political correctness officers. But they are scared to death. They're easy to break. The middle ones tend to be the hardest. The low level ones are easy too, right now, because they're questioning things, and everyone around them will join in. But let me explain to you where I'm coming from on the political correctness officer. There was a movie that illustrates it quite well. The movie was A Hunt for Red October. The Hunt for Red October was about a Soviet sub that was invented to start a world war. And Sean Connery played Marco Ramius. And he was going to defect with the sub before they could start a war. But the first thing he did was he killed the political officer. He broke his neck because he knew he would never go along with it. He was too heavily conditioned. He was too heavily programmed. what they would do in the Soviet Union is that they would take someone, kind of like Chad from Iowa, who's the big anti-racist at the local campus. He's not a leader. He is a follower. They instill guilt, humiliation, and then they heavily program them. They're so heavily programmed, they usually they're hated by all the white rabbits around them. At first they're listened to, and then they're admonished, they're given positions, and then they're hated and despised. White rabbits go through this. They went through it in the Soviet Union. If you're a political officer, you could end up with a Sean Connery breaking your neck. Political officers in the Soviet Union were hated because they were too heavily programmed. If you had a good one that wouldn't take himself serious, that played along with the crew, that went along with the plans, they were fine. But they were notoriously hated. Why? Because they're rats. They're rats. White rabbits hate heavily programmed rabbits. At a certain point in time, they will rebel against them. I'll give you another famous example. It is one of the most famous examples you never heard of. In Nazi Germany, there's a group called the Hitler Boys, and the Hitler Boys were Nazi Party members. They weren't leaders. They were heavily, heavily programmed. They were rats. And they would try to stick them in various areas. And even some of the other fellow party members, because not everyone in Nazi Germany, not everyone in National Socialist Germany was a party member. No, they're, you know, it's kind of like not everyone in the U.S. Armed Forces is a member of the Republican or Democratic Party. No, no, no. And so they would try to take these political officers, and they would stick them in different places to act as rats or to reinforce programming. Well, they, at a certain point in time, they're hated. If they won't play along, if they take themselves too seriously, they get their necks broke. And the famous examples were the U-boats. The U-boats were the toast of Berlin. The U-boat captains could do everything they wanted. Yeah, they're good Germans. Yeah, they were there for their Führer. They weren't interested in starting problems in Germany, but it is typical rabbit nature to hate political officers. They don't like it. They don't like people taking things too seriously and then get on your nerves. And on a small U-boat or on a small submarine, well, guess what happened? A lot of them ended up disappearing. They went for swims and they never came back. If they got one of these, what they call the Hitler boys, on their U-boats, a lot of them were killed. They couldn't take them. It's not that they weren't good Germans. It's just that no white rabbit can handle the political officer. At a certain point in time, male and female, they will rebel. And what I'm going to do in this is I'm going to give you rebellion tactics. I'm going to give you rebellion tactics that work, because whether it be the dog faces, the proud peacock dog face of World War II, whether it be the Schwa babies, the self-hating white baby boomers, whether it be the Schwa, what I call the self-hating white fools, Chad in Iowa, the head of the local anti-racist, they are all prone to guilt and humiliation. Why? Because that's how they were programmed. That's where it starts. That's where it begins. And so we're going to break this down. I'm going to go into each one of them, and I'm going to show you how to tie it all together. We're going to use simple phrases. It's so simple, but insidious. Why does it work? Why did your ancestors think they were sinners that had to go to confession? Why do your neighbors think they're racist? Why did Todd in Iowa stand up and go through some big guilt and humiliation ceremony and list all the evil things his ancestors did as white people, hold up a thimble and said, you know what, I'll put all my hate in this thimble and put all the love in my heart? Why did he go through that? And then, you know, then they say, oh, he's a good one, we're going to program him, he'll be an agent, or as I say, a PCO, a political correctness officer. Well, you know, for the same reason your neighbors think they're racist and stuff like that, we're not trying to fight it. We're just going to show you how to turn things in your direction now that the tide is starting to turn. Now that the wave is forming, I'm going to show you how to get on the tail of Godzilla and let her slap them around a little bit. But we're going to do it through guilt and humiliation. These are baseline humiliation tactics. They are simple. They are always simple, but they are. It's the timing. It's what's going on in society. It's everything else. They are as simple as, oh, yes, we can. And they are just as dangerous and effective in a group because they break everything. They are violent. Humiliation is violent. Most of you listening to this, the times that you were most pissed off in your life is because someone humiliated you. They didn't humiliate you with a rocket launcher at your head. They didn't humiliate you with a gun at your face. They humiliated you with words. right? It's your girlfriend that you're ticked off at making the cutting remark. It's your boyfriend that says something about the new dress that you just can't get out of your head. You cannot escape sound. You cannot get away from words. We are preying on their base feelings. We are preying on them like predators, like big white jackrabbit predator rabbits, right? But that's our job. And in between that, we will enforce new programming. But not only is it effective on them, it's effective on everyone in the area, because you cannot escape sound. And so we'll go into each one of them, and I'll give you different scenarios and tactics. It's insidious, it's hated, it's feared. It will go from low-level psychological warfare. These tactics are defined as low-level psychological warfare all the way up to low-level something called nerve war in CIA terms. And I'll go into that, because I had questions from Jonathan in somewhere like Missouri when I'm going to go into low-level nerve war. These kids are reading all kinds of crazy stuff online. But I'll explain it to you. It's very simple stuff, and it is just breaking. You're basically breaking in past their programming. Again, it is simple until you see it work. It is comedy. I'll be back, and we'll go into each scenario, and I'll give you real examples. Baseline humiliation tactics basically are called, it's a what you see is what you get. They're called baseline. I call them that because they go to the baseline. They go back to the beginning. They go back to when everything began, when the problem started, when the behavior was first conditioned. And it goes back to the nerve center and brings up the guilt and the humiliation all at once. It always creates a problem. And any time you create a problem having to do with humiliation or guilt in a white rabbit, you're going to get a reaction. And in between that, sometimes the greatest reaction is not from that person, it's from the people around them. The first one I want to talk about is one for the World War II generation. You know, the World War II generation is feeling like they were ripped off, and they were. But in every group of them, you got the proud peacock, the dog faces. And in World War II, they were called the dog faces because they always obeyed authority. Now, they may work on the battlefield, but when they got them home, they put them in the GI Bill back in America, back in Great Britain, and then they brainwashed living daylights out of them, you know, and told them it was evil to be white, yada, yada, yada. That's when it all began. Most of them didn't buy into it, but they didn't question authority. They did what they were told. They were dog faces. And a lot of them now are realizing they were ripped off. But this first one, I'm going to tell you the story behind it. I was in a barber shop, an old barber shop, and barber shops are more homogenous than churches. And in the barber shop, it's run by an old Italian named Lou, and he is old, World War II old, but he stays in business because he likes having something to do at his barber shop, so he keeps his barber shop open a few days a week. And Lou is about the only barber in there. He has another old barber buddy. But the World War II guys come up there, and a lot of young guys come in there and get their hair cut. Why? Because he's a real barber. He's not a stylist, and he can do all kinds of clipper-type cuts, which some stylists can do. But, you know, there's a big difference between barber school and beauty school. So Lou's in there, and I'm waiting my turn, and there's a row of chairs, just like an old-school barber shop. And there's always a bunch of World War II guys in there, a handful of them, getting their hair cut or what they have left of it. You know, we all lose hair over time. And that type of thing. And they're sitting there gabbing, kind of like the barbershops of old. And there's a proud peacock there, the dog face, and he likes bragging about World War II. Most of them aren't talking about World War II, but he is. He's bragging about something. And he said something that got on my nerves. And typically, sometimes I just shoot off my mouth. I'm that type. But what I said was totally accidental. I didn't really think about it. Obama had just been elected. He hadn't been elected 90 days. But as soon as Obama had got elected, I knew that this is going to be wonderful. Yes, the glass is always half full for me. McCain lost, thank goodness, because McCain's going to be doing the same thing. McCain's way more anti-white than Talibama. And, you know, I can't get any kind of, you know, McCain doesn't create a problem. He is a problem. He's a permanent sore. So the Talibama, as they call him on the political cesspool, was just elected. And he's bragging something about World War II. And all the other old World War II vets are rolling their eyes. Whatever. And I shut off my mouth as I'm reading this magazine waiting for a turn to get my hair cut. And old Barbara Lou looked at me and I said, you know, you didn't go to World War II to defeat Hitler. And everyone in the room just came to a pause, and they looked at me. I said, you went to World War II so you could have a mulatto president. And that old man, the proud peacock, he wanted to fight. Yeah, this old man, he had to be 80-some years. He wants to fight. He wants to fight me. I didn't realize what I was saying. And Lou, the barber, said, now, settle down. And he just started laughing. He said, the young guy has it 100% correct. We got gypped. And then all of a sudden, all his buddies start shaking their head back and forth. Yep, he's 100% right. We have been lied to and screwed over. And then they started admitting it. Kind of like you might remember that those famous anti-racist meetings that they got going in the 60s where they all sit around and say, our ancestors are so evil and white. Well, that's going on. It's going on again. You just got to bring it to the forefront. They'll do it. They'll do it directly in the reverse, back into healthy thinking. But they admitted it. They admitted it. And that made him even more angry, even more upset. Because, you know, he was being a PCO, a political correctness officer. He was in training mode. He was back in his programming, and I took him right to the baseline. I took him right to the World War II, and then I rubbed the salt in the wound by stating the obvious. That's all we're doing is stating the obvious and being brutally honest. But I don't know what hurt him more, the biting comment about he didn't go to World War II to defeat Hitler. He went to World War II so he could have a mulatto president. I didn't know at the time whether it was that or the fact that his friends were, and Lou, the barber, were laughing at him because, you know, it's true. Or the fact that he was a proud Republican and it rubbed salt right in the wound. But I stated the obvious. And that is the one I've been using on the World War II generation. Believe it or not, most of them will shake their head and admit it. They know they've been screwed. They know they got conned. They know that they, you know, I'm not saying they weren't brave. They didn't do some brave things on the battlefield and whatnot, but they dropped the ball when they got home and they've been screwed over. They believed what they were being told, and they're not necessarily bad men, but they were conditioned to obey authority. And, since then, these World War II guys have somewhat had a line of respect. They've asked me questions about things and whatnot. And I explained to them what had been done to them, you know, programming-wise, and they agreed. They agreed that they came back and they were, you know, law-abiding citizens, and that was the one thing you didn't want to be. You wanted to stir up trouble. You know, you got to be like old Bob and be the turd in the punch bowl at every party. But you know, that's how white rabbits are. White rabbits do not like conflict. White rabbits do not want someone in their face. White rabbits are very prone to, you know, if someone yells racism, they're going to shut down. They don't want problems. What you're doing is being a problem. You're invoking a reaction. There is no way around it. When someone's sitting around bragging about World War II and you hit them with that, it's going to get a reaction. If they call you racist, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. And then go into the actual mantra. If you have time. You know, I'll try to do that no matter what, especially with old men, because they'll sit and listen. But typically, and I'll go into a full one with the baby boomers, but typically it will invoke a reaction. And you'll find that more times than not, a great many will agree with you that they got screwed over, that they've been lied to, and that they're questioning things, which is good. You know, admittance is a first sign of recovery. But using a biting comment like that goes right to the humiliation, It goes back to the baseline of the programming, is a very, very effective strategy on that generation and those in the area. It affects everyone in the area. It can be used all over the world. Sure, you can use it. You can use it in Germany. You know, those Americans went to war in World War II so they could have a mulatto president. You can use it in the United Kingdom. You know, we all went to war with America so they could have a mulatto president. You can use it anywhere. You know, and if they call you racist, well, in your opinion, you're racist. If they call you a Nazi, in your opinion, I'm a Nazi. You're just saying that because I'm white. Nazi is a word you yell at white people to shut them up. You know, no one, no one's playing Mexico with non-Mexicans in some attempt to end nationalism, you know, and by creating a blended humanity in only Mexico. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans in some attempt to end nativism by creating a blended humanity in only Africa. No one's flooding China with non-Chinese in some attempt to end racism by creating a blended humanity in only China. Only white countries are doing it. Only white children are affected by it. Only white politicians support it. It's genocide. You can do that all day long. That is a quick snippet, what I would call the quick snippet. But next, we're going to go into Schwab babies. And again, these tactics are very, very simple. They invoke a response. They are always simple. They're as simple as, oh, yes, we can. If they're complicated, if it's anything more complicated than a soundbite or than a name to call people, it typically won't invoke the quick response so that you can go in after the reaction and put in place mantra type statement to affect the whole area. But the next one, we will talk about the Schwab babies. The self-hating white baby boomers are a very, very funny group. They're a group that is comedy because they are a failed generation. They are complete failures. None of the programs put in place, their generations put in place, has ever worked. None of this so-called liberalism. There's nothing liberal about it. None of the so-called progressive. It's nothing progressive about it. It's comedy. But right now, they are feeling guilty about being white, because each one of them knows they screwed up. The ones in power know they screwed up. And the way you get to them is by stating the obvious. You call them self-hating white baby boomers. You call them Schwab babies. You tell them they're a failed generation. It is horrendous when done with any amount of timing. Typically, when this will happen in a conversation is after what has occurred of late. Let me give you a specific instance. At dinner, you know, with a large bunch of people, I was asked the typical question I get asked: what I think about Obama. I said, well, Africans have 50-plus countries on the planet. Africans have half the world's natural resources. Africans are the most numerous people on this planet. They're the most numerous group, period. Africans have the greatest piece of farmland in Africa. Africans live with me in America as a minority. I am a minority. There's not much more I can do for them other than make them president. You should have heard the howls from the self-hating white baby boomers. Then they said, oh, that's so racist. In your opinion, that's racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. And then they started talking about this race problem. And I interjected. I said, you know, African for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everybody. It is said that there's a race problem. You say there's a race problem will be solved when the third world pours into every white country and only white countries. The Netherlands and Belgium are as crowded as Japan and Taiwan. But no one says Japan or Taiwan will solve this race problem by bringing in millions of third worlders and, quote, assimilating, unquote, with them. Everyone says the final solution to this race problem is for every white country and only white country to assimilate, i.e. intermarry with those non-whites. What if I said there was a race problem, and this race problem would be solved only if hundreds of millions of non-Asians were brought into every Asian country and only Asian country? How long would it take anyone to realize I'm not talking about a race problem, I'm talking about a final solution to the Asian problem? And how long it would take for some sane Asian man to notice this? And what kind of psycho Asian man wouldn't object to this? But if I tell that obvious truth about the ongoing program of genocide against Indo-European children, liberals and fools like you across the table from me call me a Nazi who's going to kill 6 million Jews. I did a mantra. I did the whole entire thing at a dinner party. Yeah, it takes a minute to do. It's memorized. But I did it. I did it and catered it to the group. And they sat and they I don't know if they don't hear it. They do not hear it when you do it. But then they went on. A couple of them went on. A couple of them got into it. And I just started saying, you know, you're just self-hating white baby boomers. You can't admit you're a failed generation. You sit around and you drink your $10 Frappuccino lattes. And I know, I said, you're exactly the type of upper middle class, self-hating white baby boomers that put me on a bus you would never in a million years put your kids on. And oh my goodness, were they upset. She walked away, the woman walked away and went to the bathroom, and she was angry, visibly upset. It invoked a response. And there are many ways to go about it. But what I am doing is I am putting pressure right back to the point of guilt and humiliation where it all began, right to the baseline. And I'm doing it by bringing up socioeconomics. I'm doing it by name-calling. It is na-na-na-na-na-na. It is you're a fool. You're an idiot. You're a failed generation. You're a schwa baby. You're a self-hating white baby boomer. Why do you hate yourself? Please, stand up and tell us why you hate yourself so much. Why are you such a stupid fool? You know, and she said, what are you going to do when the country comes all multi-racial? I said, well, right now the country's a failed country. It's going the way of California, permanently bankrupt. You got a Russian, German, Chinese axis. You got a Russian, German, Italian axis forming. I'm like, I'm sure all the white kids and all the young, smart whites will get on a plane and they'll leave and they'll go into consolidation. You know, we've been expanding for hundreds of years. Instead of saying all hope is lost, we're going to have some Rojava race war, I said we're going to get on a plane and leave. Now, do I think that's actually going to happen? It could. It could, all else being equal, but all else won't be equal in this one because the people running Anglosphere know it. But this lady didn't know that. She looked at me spellbound. You know, she thought for a second, her kids will get on a plane. Her kids will leave. I said, no, the old white baby boomers will sit around and eat cat food because the Mexicans won't be able to run everything. You know, that evokes a response, too. So instead of being fearful, I'm answering her question in a way she's not really used to, and they were upset. A couple of them started laughing. You know, they didn't really know what to do. But again, you're throwing a curveball. It works. Name calling works because they all know they're self-hating white baby boomers. They all know they're a failed generation. A friend of mine in my generation, she said afterwards that the frappe latte, the lappuccino, the $10 frappe latte cappuccino cooler or whatever I said, she said she nearly died laughing. But that is what it takes. And they're simple. It is duplicatable. You can do it over and over again. Catch them off guard? Yes. It's baseline. You're taking them to the baseline. Why it works is the same reason it worked to begin with. They're nice rabbits. They've just been guilt-tripped to death and humiliated to death. What you're doing is you're just pretty much taking a big carrot and hitting with them in a way they don't expect. You're answering questions in a tone they don't expect. You're saying things that they're not used to. They're not comfortable. You're making them uncomfortable, and that's where change happens. Does it affect them as much as everyone in the area? Some it does, some it doesn't, but it definitely affects everyone in the area, because the last thing any of them want to do around you after that is to have you call them self-hating white baby boomers, because white people don't like being called names. It doesn't matter whether it's racist or self-hating white baby, they don't like that. It doesn't feel good because they're all walking through Borders bookstore and seeing all the books on white self-hatred. They're very, you know, the most of these crowds are very well versed in what's on TV and what's going on. So it's pretty funny. But my job is not to argue. I'm not arguing with anybody. I'm making my point. I'm throwing the curveball. I'm the turd in the punch bowl. I'm answering questions in a way that they are not used to and that is custom tailored for the schwa babies. Now, in the next one, I'm going to go into Chad in Iowa. We're going to use Chad in Iowa. And Chad in Iowa is an upper-middle-class kid. The demographics of the anti-racist group is all the same. They're generally upper-middle-class. Most of them are from, some of them even from wealthy parents. They're white. They're generally males. Not always, but mostly males. They're low-level lone rangers. They think they know everything, but they're heavily, heavily programmed, like the baby boomer. What you're doing is busting into the programming from the baseline. But generally, in this one, Chad would be fast-talking. He would be able to call names and be able to call names back. And what I will do to Chad is I will call him a name. I'll just say, Chad, you're being a self-hating white animal. or a self-hating white fool. I've used both of them, and they'll look at me, and he won't know what to say. Sometimes they'll walk away, sometimes they'll engage, and sometimes they'll say, what do you think about Obama? I say, Africans have 50-plus countries in the world. Africans have half the world's natural resources. Africans have the largest population the world's ever seen, and Africans have the greatest piece of farmland the world's ever known, Africa. Africans live with me as a minority. I am a minority. Not much more I can do for them other than make them president. Now we can get serious about long-term solutions, like white European children getting a home. And he will just be floored. You don't know what to do. A lot of times, you know, the only response is, of course, racism. Well, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. No, anti-racism is this, that. I said, no, because no one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans in some attempt to end racism by creating a blended humanity in only Mexico. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans in some attempt to end a blended humanity and only create a blended humanity in Africa. In some attempt to end racism, no one's flooding China with non-Chinese in some attempt to end racism by creating a blended humanity in only China. Only white countries are doing it. Only white children are affected. Only white, self-hating white animals like you support it. It's genocide. And then he will engage. He will come unglued, and they will keep saying, no, because human beings are 99.9. I said, well, you don't understand my point, Chad. You see, you self-hating white animals still don't get it. No one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans saying, gee, human beings are 99.9% all the same, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only Mexico. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans. They're saying, gee, they're, you know, human beings are 99.9% the same, and no one's creating a blended humanity in only Africa. No one's flooding China with non-Chinese and saying, gee, human beings are 99.9% the same, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only China. Only white countries are doing this. Only white children are being affected by it. Only self-hating white animals like you support it. It's genocide. He will keep engaging, and I will keep engaging as well. It will affect everyone in the area. He will not even know what's going on. And then once I start breaking through, and it can happen quicker, sooner rather than later, I'm going to start bringing up socioeconomics. I don't believe in class warfare because class warfare is by and large idealistic. I'm not idealistic. You just think someone like me is. But I will use it because he believes in it. And so what I'm going to do is start invoking even more guilt about his parents. I'm going to say, Chad, are your parents self-hating white baby boomers? Did your parents move you around in a $2,000 stroller with 8 wheels? And did your parents drink frappe latte chino coolers from Starbucks? Come on, Chad. Your parents self-hating white baby boomers. Yes, yes, Chad. Did you go to a rich school, Chad? And I'm going to keep ribbing him. I'm going to break him down. I'm going to break through. And once I break through, I'm just going to keep going at it. I'm going to keep calling him self-hating white animal. I say, why do you hate yourself so much? You know, I'm going to keep on him, and I'm going to keep going on a consistent message over and over again. Every time he gives me something, I'm going to say, yes, Chad, but you don't understand my point. And I've seen cases where you can go through, literally, they'll talk about race as a social construct, and I'll say, yeah, but you're missing my point. And then everyone in the room will start laughing. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans saying, you know what, race is just a social construct, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only Africa. No one's flooding China with non-Chinese. Say, you know what? Race is a social construct, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only China. No one's flooding Japan with non-Japanese or Saudi Arabia with non-Arabs or anywhere else in the world and say, you know, race is a social construct, so we're going to create a blended humanity in only Japan, etc. Only white countries are doing it. Only Indo-European children are affected by it. Only self-hating white animals like you support it. It's genocide. And then I may read them the Riot Act on genocide. Yeah, I'll have no mercy on it. I'll go into the rules for genocide. He'll ask, well, what is genocide? And that is a big thing. I'll say, A, Article 2, Convention on the Prevention of Punishment of Crime of Genocide from the 1948 defines genocide as any following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole, in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group as such. A, killing members of the group. B, causing serious or bodily or mental harm to members of the group. C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Let me read that again to you, Chad. deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Do you understand that? That's genocide. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. Forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And they will look kind of shell-shocked. They never heard that definition before. But again, when you're talking to someone who's fast-talking, it takes a little more talent to do because you don't have time. You've got to continuously engage. If he says, if he keeps calling you racist, you say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. And then you go into, in your opinion, I'm a racist, and you keep doing it until he calms down, then you say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. But in your opinion is a constant way to argue back. And I'll be back, and we'll talk about a couple of the different segments. And these are just ideals. But what you want to do, because Chad is starting to feel stupid about feeling stupid for being white, it's happening all over the Western world. Why? Because it's time. Demoralization, 15 years under New Medium, is coming out. We have a massive amount of negative conditioning. And you don't want to be around when that happens, when that starts flipping. And that's what's happening. It's starting to boomerang. The big thing with Chad is that he's a political correctness officer. He does the bidding of the red hippo, of mommy professor. The other white rabbits hate him. One thing that the biggest effect it has is on the other rabbits in the area, because they start making fun of him. That's the big one. That is where the change in behavior occurs, is when your peer group starts making fun of them. After you leave, they start calling them Chad. You still hate yourself, and they will just dig. Again, you're poking fun. This stuff wouldn't work 10 years ago. This stuff works right now. But we'll continue this conversation, and I'll talk about the couple different groups and the couple different tactics scenario. It's very easy. But you're pinpricking self-hatred. You're pinpricking generational guilt. It's taking Chad right back to where he stood up, and he held out a thimble, and he put all his hate in the thimble and all the love in his heart. And once they hit him with that, they go deeper. And once they go deeper into guilt and humiliation, they insert their new anti-racist programming. What I'm doing is hammering him. But I'm not really after him. I'm using him and as a way to destroy the conditioning in the area. Because most of them want a reason to call him a name. They want a reason to get out. They want a reason to shut the door in his face. And what I'm doing is giving them permission. I'm giving Sean Connery, like in Red October, I'm giving them a permission to break the neck of the political officer, politically speaking, with words. With simple words, just like calling racism would do it. You know, if calling someone a racist really hurts their feelings, well, calling someone a self-hating white animal, whatever it takes to get through. But again, you're affecting the whole entire area, and it's going to invoke a response. You know, if he says, if he comes back and says anything about, well, you're going to have to live in, I'll say no. America's failed. Anglosphere's failing. We'll just get on a plane and go and into a Russian-German axis. And I said, why? You know, if he says on about that, I said, well, why don't you look up how many skinheads are in Moscow? I'm like, it sounds like a safe place for me. You know, and again, I'm going to keep after him. He won't even realize what's going on, but everyone around him will, because it starts to become funny. But again, I'm going to change tone and rhythm based on how fast the person is answering. Some of it takes a little more skill than others, but it is basic name calling. Everyone listening to this can say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-Semitism or anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Everyone listening to this can call someone a name. Self-hating white baby boomer. Self-hating white animal. Self-hating white fool. Everyone listening to this can say, yeah, you didn't go to World War II to defeat Hitler. You went to World War II so you could have a mulatto president in America. Everyone listening to this can do those simple things. It creates a problem. And that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to instigate. The difference between these tactics and the others is this one is even more offensive. Because you're interjecting yourself and calling them names. Name calling is always offensive. When you see the neocons call names like racist or anti, that's offensive. And your offensive tactic back is, of course, you cannot win by playing defense. And I'll be back in a second, and we'll go into a couple more things. And if you're dealing, one last thing, if you're dealing with the fast-yapping Hebrews, the Jew rabbis, the anti-racist type that are very professional, they know exactly what they're up to. I mean, if you define racism as they define it, and you're not in Israel, well, I would ask them if there's racism in Israel. They'll say yes, and they say, why aren't you in Israel? They'll call you an anti-Semite. You say, in your opinion, I'm an anti-Semite. You're just saying that because I'm a Gentile and you're obviously a Jewish supremacist. If you weren't a Jewish supremacist, you'd be in Israel fighting racism. For what it's worth, if you go to Israel and you create a perfectly blended humanity between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and you end all racism there, then we'll listen to you. Until then, you're a Jewish supremacist. And you can keep on. You don't have to bring up anyone's religion or ethnicity, but if they look like us, if they have no loyalty, they are fair game. There are two levels. There is a low level, like Chad. Chad is heavily programmed. He's someone in the system. There is an upper level one, and sometimes it can be near here nor there. Someone that's a professional diversity consultant, making a couple hundred thousand a year. But have no mercy on using fear and destroying hope and staying and coming back to the basic name calling over and over again. Most people don't like this type of thing. Everyone wants something to say to defend themselves. Most people don't mind a name to call someone if they're getting on their nerves. Typically, in an office, if some lady wears a dress to the office, the first woman that makes fun of her is the icebreaker, then they all join in. That's really what you're doing. You're giving everyone a permission to be a white rabbit. You're having them follow the white rabbit instead of the pink rabbit. You're attacking the PCO. And there's always a resident PCO in every office. And, you got your low levels that are just like the self-hating white baby boomer that I used, where they are programmed, they don't realize they're programming until you start hitting them with it. Then you got your upper level. They know they're programmed, and they, to a certain extent, they're in the system. They may be the low-level lone ranger that doesn't realize it, like Chad. They may be a mid-level who realizes it and they're running a game. The Tim Weisses, there's an upper level. Believe it or not, the upper level are much, much more susceptible. The upper level are much, much more susceptible than the low level ones, simply because John McCain has never been questioned. His identity cannot hold up under questioning. But have no mercy. And every one of you, again, can defend yourself. Every one of you can call a name. Some of these tactics and different concepts are not for everybody. But you only need one in every area. That's all your enemy has. In America, you have these different racialist groups that'll pass out flyers. Or the British National Party will pass out flyers back in the day. Let's go over the UK. And they'll pass out flyers, and then there'll be someone that call the office and say they're racist. Typically, that'll be a white person. And they won't even realize what they're doing until it's done. Every area has one of these people. They're heavily programmed. But you just verbally harass them. What you're doing is taking it to the baseline. You're making fun of them. You're taking it down to guilt and humiliation. You're taking it back to where it all began. Before any change happens on the outside, it would have to happen on the inside. Your object is not to change that person. Your object is to change everyone in the area. Make them think twice. And that's where it really becomes effective. You're using that person as sort of like a verbal punching bag. You're making something at their expense. Again, it isn't for everybody, but being an anti-racist coordinator over elements of the UK is not for everybody. There's a certain type of person there. I'm just making these techniques and these tactics available to you. And certainly you can vary it. I am giving you ideals. I'm not by no means saying that there's only one way, but it always comes back to a consistent message. Some of it's slow and some of it's fast. It really depends on your personality and what type of person you are. There's another key in this too, and it comes back to network. there are two types of groups. There's a type of group where you go and join a membership, like the British National Party even, or the Democratic Party in America, or the SPD in Germany, or you know, the Front National in France, so on and so forth. And then people join groups for affirmation. They might join groups to gossip. They can join groups to have a membership card. They can join groups to feel good about themselves on some level. Everyone's got a different motive for joining a group. The wonderful thing about the second kind of group is an ad hoc group. It's just put together on the fly. An ad hoc group is not a membership group. People come together not for affirmation. Affirmation goes second. People come back, come together to achieve some type of specific objective. And those are the best type. In America, you always have a lot of the literature on Lewis Beam. Lewis Beam talks about leaderless resistance. Well, that's basically what you're doing, except you're doing the practical politics kind, the velvet type, weaving velvet instead of, you know, dealing steel. But the reason that's effective, and that's not what they don't go into the reason it's effective, is because they're ad hoc groups. All the affirmation comes second. You know, when you study the different terror networks in the Middle East, the different jihadist networks, all these young Muslims will have a different motive, motive for joining, for coming into the group. It could be to become a hero back home. It could be a martyr for Allah to get the 50 or 70 virgins, whatever it is this morning. But they have different affirmations, different motivations. They're doing it to affirm themselves in different ways. But one thing they're putting first is achieving an objective, and that's why it's effective. Everything else goes secondary. And so that's what you would be forming. If you're on a consistent message in any area, many of you, maybe you're in a local area and you look at someone, you realize you have similar beliefs, and then you get together. Those are the best type of groups. They're ad hoc. There are many compartments. They would call themselves, well, we don't use that type of terminology. I have to call them compartments. It's a mini compartment. If you go over to Bugs, WhiteAcronline.org, everyone attached to that is in a compartment. We're here to do a specific job. We may be going there for different reasons. We may have first went there for different reasons. I went there because I respect Bob. I saw someone as little. You don't forget it when you see someone like that in action. And I kept up with it, and I went there for a specific reason, to learn something. But everyone goes there for a different reason. But we came together to achieve a specific objective. My job is to be this voice and to put you on, try to help you understand practical politics, how a consistent message works, to give you ideals and tactics that you can use the second you listen to this. And of course, I've went in an off the wall direction. One of the things, looking at this and what you guys would want to hear about, I looked at the things that you were listening to, and we noticed a trend. You know, they'd go to Stormfront, they'd listen to something. They'd go to DavidDuke.com to listen to something. They'd go to Voice of Reason, which is another good group. They'd go listen to something. But then they would also go into the InfoWars channels. They'd go and watch, different eccentric stuff on Google and whatnot. So that's why I went off in that area, because there's nothing racial there. There's no point in someone like me talking about conservatism, simply because the political cesspool already has that nailed. And so that's why I went into these areas. And I will continue to go into these areas, because that's what interests. Whatever works, I'm willing to do. By any means necessary is just that, by any means necessary. And we will keep this conversation alive on some level, but that is the end of the first series of Follow the White Rabbit, and this is number 17. This is baseline, humiliation tactics. And again, you're going to the baseline, you're breaking into that programming. And it can be, you have to see it work to understand the full implications, but it is very, very effective. Not because of the words, and not because of anything special about it, but because of the timing, because of the questions they're already asking. And hopefully in this series, even if you didn't like, even if you hate my voice, even if you hate what I have to say, you're interested in at least defending yourself as one of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. You're at least interested in learning a little more about yourself and why you think and how you think. Because personally, that's the only thing that drives me, is making sure that they have a home. And so my motive for doing this is twofold: to make sure they're on a consistent message, and make sure they have a home. Because if you don't have a home, you can't survive. You know, having the whole top of the planet and not having the home is a little ridiculous. And to make sure those responsible are held accountable. I know that if I do my job, everyone else will jump on board as far as on my team, because it's a pretty simple deal. And we will continue this conversation again. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.